hearkened, hearken, Theta King. Hie thee, sirrah, into yon darkly deep and deeply dark deep forest. Bag me a chipmunk and find thee missing hunt person.
Jack didn't like it when Aunt Edith came.
To the winner I will award a handmade coat of any color.
We love stories!
It's time for the Apple Seed, filled with stories for you and your family. All kinds of tales from all kinds of tellers. We've been doing this for a long time, since 2013. We've been bringing you tall tales and personal tales and fairy tales and historical tales and more. All kinds of tales from all kinds of tellers, and there's plenty more to come. Today, in all the parts of the world, from the beginning of stories until now, so many great tales have been told about animals. Tales about animals, see what we did there? Oftentimes, we can see distinct human personality traits and flaws and virtues as well, exemplified in the creatures that we read about. Sneaky foxes, tricky rabbits, noble eagles, energetic frogs. In these stories, we learn very human lessons from non-human sources. And today's stories are all about, or even told by, animals. You're going to hear from Bill Harley with a story called Aunt Edith Meets Tricky. We'll let you think for a while about who Tricky might be. You're going to hear from Glenda Bonin, a story about how Beetle got her colors. And to introduce us to the very first story that we're going to hear today, I'm pleased to be joined in the studio by Kendra Hanna, one of our assistant producers. Kendra, introducing a Willie Claflin story. You always wonder if you should introduce it as a Willie Claflin story or a Maynard Moose story, right? As they tend to ride right together. Maynard Moose, of course, the storytelling companion, the puppet storytelling companion of Willie Claflin. Tell us a little bit about the story we're going to hear.
Yeah, so today we are going to hear a story from Maynard Moose, a traditional moose fairy tale. In which we see a lot of elements of Robin Hood and the Little Drummer Boy and a lot of other things, too.
Can you imagine that? A mashup of Robin Hood and the Little Drummer Boy, right?
It's pretty creative, pretty original.
And that's kind of the fun of a Maynard Moose story. You recognize the story that's being riffed on, right? You recognize the story that's at the heart of it. But these kind of fractured fairy tales, these mashups of stories like you're going to hear now, are really, really delightful. This is a story called Iron John and the Little Drummer Boy, told for you again by Maynard Moose, the puppet storytelling companion of the great storyteller Willie Claflin. Happy to bring it to you here on the Appleseed.
When I was a little moose in the cradle, my mommy would sing this. Iron John Robin, your feet in the stew, just sitting around with nothing to do. If you would turn all this iron to gold, get a shave and a haircut and do what you're told. That comes from the story of Iron John Robin and the Little Drummer Boy. It happened like this. There once was a kingly king and a queenly queen and a lovely princess Marigold Tea, and they live in a big iron castle next to a deeply dark and a darkly deep dark forest. And one day the king get a hankering for a chipmunk sandwich. He called one of his huntsmen to him. Hie thee, sirrah, said the king. Hie thee to yon forest, shoot me a chipmunk, and report back immediate. So off go the huntsman, but he do not return. Well, the next day the king called two huntsmen to him. Hearken, hearken, say the king. Hie thee, sirrah, into yon darkly deep and deeply dark deep forest. Bag me a chipmunk and find the missing hunt person. So off go the two huntsmen, but they did not return. So on the third morning, the king called all of his huntsmen to him, and all of his dukes and earls and lords and knights and men of high degree. Hark, hearken, and hurroo, say the king. Hie thee to yon forest, bag me a chipmunk, or possibly three, and find the missing huntsperson, then report back immediate. So off they go into the forest, but not one of them returned. And a shadow of fear fell to crofty land, and from that day forth nothing was seen going into or coming out of the darkly deep and the deeply dark deep forest. Well, the people in the castle, they do not know what to do, and finally they decide to pretend that none of it have ever happened. So they build a big fence so they cannot see the forest at all. A big high fence, and they can't see the forest at all. They pull all the window shades down on that end of the castle, What do you say, what for? I never was a forest around here. Nope, never did see a forest. What huntsman? No, we never had any huntsmen. No, up north, I think there are some huntsmen. Or there's some dukes and earls down to the south, but we never had any here in this particular part of the world. Nope, never has been a forest around here. Nope. And they practiced the ancient and kingly art of denial. Well, they would have lived happy in denial forever after, except for the lone stranger. One day come galumping up to the castle, the lone stranger on a milk-white steed, and he demand to see the king. "I wish to go into yon darkly deep and deeply dark deep forest," said the lone stranger, "and find out what evil dwells therein." "Now, you must have the wrong place," said the king. "There is no dark forest around here, and there never has. Perhaps up north you might find a forest, but these parts here we've never seen as much as a single tree." "Yeah, but as I galump along on my horsey," said the lone stranger, "I can see from the top of my horsey the deeply dark forest over the fence." "Perhaps I did not make myself clear," said the king. "There has never been a forest around here. Disagreeable with the king, if not a healthy thing to do." "Well, could I just have permission to go behind the fence?" said the lone stranger. "Certainly," said the king, "but there is nothing there." "Well, I ain't afraid of nothing," said the stranger, and off he go, glump, 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 around the end of the fence, and there, of course, is the darkly deep and the deeply dark deep forest. And so into the deeply dark and the darkly deep dark forest go the lone stranger, leading his horsey behind. And pretty soon, as he go deeper and deeper into the wood, hear a strange drumming sound. Farther and farther, deeply and more darkly into the forest, go the lone stranger, and the drumming sound get louder and louder and louder. And finally, peering through a clearing, he see a horrified wild man, all covered with hairs from the top of his head down to the bottom of his toes, playing the big drum. "Boy, oh boy," said the lone stranger, "I bet the king gonna be pretty interestable in this horrified wild man." And taking a rope net from his saddlebag, he sneak up behind the tree and drop it over the horrified wild man, zoop, and tie him up and take him back to the castle. Well, the king is real happy to have such an interestable forest curiosity, and they put him in a big iron cage, kind of a little horrified one-man zoo there. They say, "Horrified wild man," they call him Iron John because his hair was the color of rusty iron, and they give the lone stranger 1,000 gold pieces for a reward. And the lone stranger glump off, dum 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 dum, and they would have all lived happy for never afterward. Except for the little drummer boy. One afternoon, the little drummer boy was in the castle courtyard. Rump-a-pum-pum, 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 rump-a-pum-pum. And he happened to sit down next to the big iron cage, and no sooner did he sit down next to the big iron cage than two great big horrified hands come out and start to pounding on his drum. Ka-doom-doom-doo-ka-doo-ka-doo-ka-doom-doom. "Oh, far out," the old drummer boy. "A fellow percussionist, let's get down." So away they go. Boom, 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 doom, 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 boom, 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 doom, 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 doom. They pick up sticks, start to wang on the iron bars of the cage. Clangity, clang, clang, doom, 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 clangity, boom, 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 clangity, boom, 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 boom. Well, the noise offended the king. He stick his head out the window. "Ordinance 4C prohibit loud and disgustifying sound. Cease and do this or under arrest." "Yeah, big deal to me," say Iron John. "I in this cage already." Now, but they confiscate the little drummer boy's drum. That means they take it away. "Jeez, rump a bummer," say little drummer boy. "Bummer, bummer." Well, he kind of mad in the brain part, and that night he sneaked the key out from underneath of the queen's pillow, and he unlocked the cage, and he set Iron John free. Iron John take little drummer boy on his shoulder, and together they go into the deeply dark and the darkly deep dark forest, and pretty soon they hear a very loud drumming sound. Louder and louder, they get deeper and deeper into the darkly deep dark forest, come the drumming sound. And finally, coming into a clearing, there in the flickering firelight, the little drummer boy can see all of the missing huntsmen, and all of the missing dukes and earls and lords and nobles and knights and men of high degree. And they all had growed their hair down to the bottom of their foots, and they was all pounding on the drums. And no sooner did Iron John step into the firelight than all of a sudden they arose as one. "Hail, Master Robin," they all cried. "Ooh, I thought your name was Iron John," said the little drummer boy. Many call me Iron John, say Iron John Robin, but my merry men call me Robin. And all that night they celebrate by drumming on the drum and drinking the forest brew and shooting the bow and arrow, twang, and robbing from the rich and giving to the poor. And next morning they have the language lesson, therefore the language of the drum. For instance, if you would like to say, suppose you would like to say, have you considered a morning breath freshener? You would go, doom, 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 doom. Or you'd like to say, another order of fried slugs, please, clam. You'd go, toom, 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 toom. Or if you'd like to say, excuse me, you're standing on my beard. You'd go, tick, 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 toom, tick, 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 toom. Well, they all would have lived happy forever after, percussifying in the forest, except for the lovely Princess Marigold. One morning, her come crashing through the underbrush. Help, 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 say Princess Marigold. The castle is under attack. The evil armies of the north shoot the bow and arrow at the king. They're gonna burn the castle down and burn the forest flat. Well, no sooner had her delivered this unpleasant message than they arose as one, beating on their drums, and they come crashing through the deeply dark forest. Rump-a-bum-bum, rump-a-bum-bum, rump-busting out through the underbrush, right through the fence. And no sooner did the evil armies of the north take one look at the horrified wild mans beating the drums than they were scared right out of their armors. Clang! And in pink and starch naked, they run home to the north. Terrified wild man, help, help, help! Well, the king, he's so happy the kingdom have been saved by Iron John Robin and the lovely Princess Marigold that he say, you shall be married, the two of you, tomorrow morning. You shall have each other's hands in marriage and all the rest of each other besides. However, say the queen, not until you get out of those disgusting rags, get a shave and a haircut. So they got a shave and a haircut, did what they were told, and put on some nice tunics and doublets, splash on a little cologne, and next morning the Iron John Robin and the lovely Princess Marigold were married, and as the bells in the tower go clang, 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 everything iron was turned into gold. That's right, the iron cage was turned into a golden cage. The iron castle was turned into a golden castle. The iron armor of the evil army of the north was turned into goldy army sparkle, sparkle in the sunlight. Even Iron John Robin's rusty colored hair was turned to gold. That's right, and that's why my mommy always used to sing, if you would turn all this iron to gold, get a shave and a haircut, and do what you're told. And that was the beginning of the golden age, the age of clean shaven and cologne. And that is why, to this very day, every year, the men go out into the forest, and they pound on the drum, and they let the hair grow. And that's also why they come home and get a shave and a haircut and do what they're told. So that goes for you, too. Get a shave, get a haircut, do what you're told. And that's the end of Iron John and the Little Drummer Boy. That's all. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Iron John and the Little Drummer Boy, told for you by Maynard Moose, the puppet storytelling companion of the great storyteller Willie Claflin. Willie, who hails from Maine, now lives in the Bay Area in California. You know, Kendra, there's something that's one of the things that I find the most fun about listening to a Maynard Moose story, right, is you might expect the audience for a story told by a puppet, right, to be mostly made up of kids. But it's mostly adult voices that you hear laughing in that audience, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah, and I mean, there's a reason I chose this story, and it's because it made me laugh. And I love fairy tales so much, especially new ones, which is why I love Maynard Moose so much, because they're so original.
Yeah.
I've never heard stories, fairy tales specifically, told so frankly before. He believes every word he's saying.
He sure does, yeah. And it's so fun to hear Maynard Moose tell these stories because, you know, certainly they're just goofy as all get out. But I'm always surprised at kind of how blazingly smart they are, you know. I mean, Maynard Moose makes reference to so many things and you find, gosh, this is a real intelligence at work here behind all of this goofiness, right?
Exactly. They are so masterfully crafted. And I think that there's something in them for everyone. For kids, they're delightfully ridiculous. For adults, they're smart and still delightfully ridiculous.
That's right. Willie Claflin and Maynard Moose with Iron John and the Little Drummer Boy. There's a lot more coming up on The Appleseed. Kendra, thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Appleseed. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to the Appleseed. Here's Sam Payne.
If you're just joining us, we're deep into an hour's worth of stories, mostly about animals. Of course, we always feel like animal stories are really stories for humans, right? To teach humans how to behave by giving them a way to look at some of their own traits through these stories of animals. And before the break, you heard a story called Iron John and the Little Drummer Boy, a story told for you by Willie Claflin and his storytelling companion, Maynard Moose. Well, thinking about animal stories, we thought about this old fable, one of Aesop's fables. We'll share it with you as today's entry in the Radio Family Journal.
The Radio Family Journal with Sam Payne. A tiny little story for you and your family. Right when you need it, on the Appleseed.
The relationship that people have with animals is sometimes one that depends not so much on interaction, but on observation. In the place where I live, for example, you can tell things about the changing of the seasons by watching for when the deer come down from the mountain and into the yards and orchards of the folks in town. People watch for the migrations of birds, or watch for butterflies or whales to head in one direction or another as an indicator of what's going on in the seasons of the world. That's how it's been for a long time. Humans watch the animals to know what's coming next. Well, there's a little story that could be more than 2,500 years old, a fable by the ancient storyteller Aesop, that makes something of this idea. But in this story, it's not people watching the behavior of animals to determine the way of things. It's the other way around. Animals watching people to know what's coming next. In this story, there's a lark, a little bird. This lark is the mother of a family of young birds, and their nest is safely hidden among the stalks of wheat in a vast wheat field. And every day, the mother bird has to leave her nest and go find food for her little ones. And every day, as she leaves them, she tells them to watch and listen and tell her when she returns of any news they might have gathered. And one day, as the baby birds were watching and listening, the farmer came out with his son to look over the field. And as he looked over the field, he said to his son, "My son, this grain is ready to be harvested. Let us call our neighbors to come and help us harvest the grain tomorrow." And they left the field. Well, when the mother lark returned to her little ones, they were filled with panic. "Mother," they said, "the farmer came to the field and said that it's time to harvest the grain. He says he'll do it tomorrow. If the farmer cuts the grain, our nest hidden among the stalks will be destroyed. We must move to a place of safety. Please, mother, take us away from here." "What exactly did the farmer say?" said the mother lark. And the children told her. The farmer said to his son that they should call their neighbors to help and that they'd harvest the grain tomorrow, said the little ones. "Then there's nothing to fear for now," said their mother. "If the farmer must wait for his neighbors to help him harvest the grain, there's no danger of the grain being harvested tomorrow." Well, the next day, the mother lark left her little ones so that she could find food, and she told them to watch and listen and to tell her when she returned of any news they might have gathered. And while she was away, the farmer came again to the field with his son, and he looked over the field, now heavy with grain, and said to his son, "Our neighbors have not come to help us harvest the wheat. But it is high time that the grain was cut. We must ask our relatives to help. Go and tell your aunts and uncles and cousins to meet us here tomorrow morning, and we will begin." Well, when the mother lark returned to her little ones, they were filled with terror. "Mother," they said, "the farmer came to the field and said that it's time to harvest the grain. He says he'll do it tomorrow. If the farmer cuts the grain, our nest hidden among the stalks will be destroyed. We must move to a place of safety. Please, mother, take us away from here." "What exactly did the farmer say?" said the mother lark. And the children told her. The farmer said to his son that they should call their relatives to help and that they'd harvest the grain tomorrow, said the little ones. "Then there is nothing to fear for now," said their mother. "If the farmer must wait for his relatives to help him harvest the grain, there's no danger of the grain being harvested tomorrow." Well, the next day, the mother lark left her little ones again so that she could find food. And she told them to watch and listen and to tell her when she returned of any news they gathered. And while she was away, the farmer came again to the field with his son. And he looked over the field, now heavy with grain, and said to his son, "Our relatives have not come to help us harvest the wheat, but it is high time the grain was cut. You and I, son, must go right now to the barn to sharpen our sickles. We'll harvest the grain ourselves tomorrow morning." When the mother lark returned to her little ones, they said, "Mother, the farmer came to the field and said that it's time to harvest the grain. He says he'll do it with his son tomorrow. If the farmer cuts the grain, our nest hidden among the stalks will be destroyed. We must move to a place of safety. Please, Mother, take us away from here." "What exactly did the farmer say?" said the mother lark. And the children told her. "The farmer said to his son that they should go right now to sharpen their sickles, and that they'd harvest the grain themselves tomorrow," said the little ones. "Ah," said their mother, "then it is time for us to move. You, my little ones, have watched and you've waited. For neighbors to help, I knew we could wait a good deal longer. For family to help, I knew we could wait longer still. But if the work has become so important, so urgent, that the farmer is ready to do it himself, the grain may really be harvested tomorrow." And the mother bird and her children moved from the wheat field to a safer home.
The Radio Family Journal of Sam Payne. A tiny little story for you and your family. Right when you need it, on the Appleseed.
Thanks for joining us for that entry in the Radio Family Journal. An ancient tale, thousands of years old, one of Aesop's fables. Aesop's fables were some of the earliest stories I remember hearing, usually on the knee of my mom, as she told me these little stories with morals that were to teach me how to be a good boy, how to grow up in the world. A lot of stories have morals, other stories don't, but all stories can give us things to think about and to share and to talk about. And if you feel like some of the stories that we're bringing you on the show spark memories and thoughts that you can share with the people that you love as stories, well, that kind of storytelling is just what we hope to foster here on the Appleseed. That kind of storytelling around the kitchen table or the living room can make for memories that last a lifetime. More stories coming up from Bill Harley, a story called Aunt Edith Meets Tricky. We teased that story at the beginning of the hour, inviting you to think of what sort of critter Tricky might be. You're going to find out in just a little bit. You're also going to hear a story called How Beetle Got Her Colors from Glenda Bonin. But first, how about a conversation with a friend? Stories come into our lives in so many ways, from families passing them along, telling to telling, from the pages of great books, from radio and podcasts, the things we see on screen, and of course, through our relationship with great songs. And exploring all of the ways that great stories get into our hearts and minds is part of what we love here on the Appleseed. I'm joined by somebody who knows what it's like to have the story of his life unfold to the strains of great music. Don Schaline, it's great to have you with us.
It's just like a soundtrack, wouldn't it? That's true. If you talk to my wife, she would tell you it's true that it's rare that I don't have the music on in the background, kind of like I need my soundtrack going. And that actually comes by birth. My father, he was kind of a shy guy that he would love to have his little 45 RPMs playing and, constantly.
Oh, yeah.
But he actually, too, he would write love notes to my mother on the 45, including the title of the record. So, it became a little message and he'd hand her the record.
And he'd hand her the record.
This is how I can express this to you. So, that comes, it's in my blood.
And the note to your mom was written on the
record. On the actual label of the record.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Right?
That's cool.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the kind of thing that makes you hope that your loved one isn't listening, because your loved one would say, "Why don't you ever do anything that for
Don,
me?" That's awesome.
That actually does tie in with this particular love song.
Yeah.
Because as a youngster in high school, I prided myself. I it seems like I need a past tense. I prouded myself of being able to write songs. And I was writing songs right and left. I was writing, you know, the next hit for sure. I was writing all kinds of songs all throughout my young life, writing original songs and wanting to get them published and things like that. Lots of hit love songs even, you know, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
And I married the love of my life, and I can't write a song for her. I can't do it. It's like, no, I got to have it better than that. I can't. And I honestly got to that point where I could not come up with a song to express what I really felt about her.
And it's kind of a, it seems a tribute to the weight and beauty and happiness in the relationship that you think not even the songwriter in me. Songwriting is too small to say the kinds of things that I want to
say. Words cannot express.
Yeah.
And okay, but I'd still really like to find a song. And with that in mind, and this is the funniest thing, we're going to we're shopping at Target store one evening, and you go over by the greeting cards and you see these little sampler CDs that they used to have in the racks, and I'm hearing some music, and I thought, well, let me pick this one up, you know, for $2 or something. I get this CD of lots of different acoustic sounds, I think it was called. And I just play it, just listening to it to see if there's anything good. And this song comes on by Sean Colvin.
Yeah.
Called I Never Saw Blue Like That Before.
And no one else has ever shown me how to see the world the way I see it now. Oh, I never saw blue like that.
And it just, for some reason, it just hit me in the heart, and I thought, that is the song I meant to write for my wife. Right there. That is the song that I wanted to say to her.
Where are my royalties?
Yeah, I know. Sean, come on. How did you get that? And, you know, so I end up playing it for her, and, you know, tears, kind of everything. The whole thing is just like, wow, this is what I meant to say. So someday I'll write a song that is like that. But in the meantime, Sean Colvin did it for me. So,
boy, it's so nice when you discover in a song the thing that you would say.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
And that does that's not the only thing that happens when you listen to great music. You know, you hear great music that takes you to places that you hadn't imagined, you know?
Yeah.
But some great music, you hear it and you think, oh, that's the thing I want to say, you know?
Right, right. And I, you know, you take a song like Elton John, Your Song.
Yeah.
You know, and it's kind of like, oh, wow, what a great, you wrote a song and it's your song, but you kind of think about it, it's not that big a deal. It may not be much, but now that it's gone, I don't know what color your eyes are. And, you know, it's kind of,
right.
Okay, that's not all that romantic, Elton. But it is still a song that is truly a tribute to somebody else.
Yeah. And sometimes, I have thought sometimes, that even the writers of the songs may not connect as meaningfully with the song as some of the people who hear the song.
True.
You know? I mean, in these great songwriters who are turning out a song a day or two songs a day, you know, and they're just writing and thinking and feeling and then and then pushing it out into the world, you know.
Yeah.
And someone like you will find it and say, this song is a piece of my heart.
You know, that's a real good point, that in many ways, great songwriters, after a while, they got to keep cranking them out. And I remember Billy Joel saying he felt like the keys of his piano were like teeth biting at his fingers because he didn't want to write anymore or something. That, you know, they have to push on to keep doing it.
Yeah.
But those of us out here are going, wow, you found it this time for me.
Have you sort of talk yourself into this notion that you won't, as a songwriter, be able to find the words, right?
I'm not giving up.
That was going to be my question.
Up.
Yeah, that's
not yet. No, and I'm not going to. I still want to push through that. I still want to find my way on that, and I just need to find the right way to do it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, a relationship is so vast right? That it would be really hard to say, I've written a song that encompasses it all, you know?
Yeah, you can't really. And you're right.
You find yourself saying, I wrote this song that I really love about that hamburger that we had that one time.
And it was great. But we're going on to the next burger.
That's right. Yeah. It's true. Oh, well, a little Sean Colvin from an old musical hand, Don Shaline, who has written many great songs and has yet to write many great songs, for sure. Don, what a pleasure to have you here on the Appleseed.
Thank you very much, Sam.
Stories come into our lives in so many ways, and we can access them in so many ways, in that case, through the memory of a song. It's great to have Don Shaline in the studio. We'll be sure to have him back. There's a lot more coming up on the Appleseed. You're going to hear from Bill Harley with a story called Aunt Edith Meets Tricky, and you're going to hear a story about how Beetle got her colors, a story from Glenda Bonin. Those stories are both coming up. I'm Sam Payne.
You're listening to The Appleseed. We'll be back in a moment.
Welcome back to The Appleseed. Here's Sam Payne.
I'm so pleased to have you with us today on The Appleseed. Hope you're enjoying the stories, some of them about animals. You heard a story called Iron John and the Little Drummer Boy. You heard a story called The Lark and Her Young Ones, an ancient tale, one of Aesop's fables. And coming up here, you're going to hear from, Bill Harley, the wonderful songwriter and storyteller. Lots of miles on Bill Harley performing in front of enthusiastic audiences of all ages. And here's a story of Bill's called Aunt Edith Meets Tricky. We know you've been thinking all hour about what sort of critter Tricky might be. Well, you're about to find out. Here's Bill Harley with Aunt Edith Meets Tricky on the Appleseed.
Jack's hamster got out at the worst possible time. Jack's hamster Tricky got out the day before Aunt Edith came, and Aunt Edith didn't like any kind of animals at all. Jack didn't mean for Tricky to get out. Got out by accident. He'd fed Tricky and he had to put the top back on the cage and the clips, but his brother Will began to tease him. Will slept in the same room as Jack. He was 2 years older, and he was always teasing Jack, always doing that. He said, "Tricky's a stupid name for a hamster." Jack said, "It is not." He said, "It is too. All it ever does is get out." Jack said, "I know. That's why I call it Tricky." Will said, "That's stupid." Jack said, "It is not. Is too." Their mother said, "Both of you stop it and go to bed." Jack was so upset about Will teasing him, he forgot to put the top on the cage. And that's how Tricky got out. Worst possible time to get out, because Aunt Edith was coming. And she hated animals. Jack didn't like it when Aunt Edith came. It wasn't that he didn't like her, was it? He just didn't like it when she came. She came once every year, and it was always the same. Jack's Aunt Edith must have been a million years old. She always looked the same. Jack thought, "She just looks baggy." She always wore baggy clothes. Her dress was baggy. Her stockings were baggy. She wore these big black shoes that Jack was always afraid that she was going to step on him with. And her hair was blue, silvery blue, and she had these eyeglasses that when Jack looked at her through them, her eyes got real big, and her skin was even baggy, and her face. And she would always say the same thing. She'd look at Jack and she'd say, "Oh, look at you. You've grown so much, I hardly recognize you. Which one are you? Oh, you are so cute. Do you know you have your father's eyes?" And Jack would always think, "She always says that." And she never smiled. Jack thought, maybe her face is so baggy she just can't smile. And every time she came, they had to get dressed up in their good clothes. And Jack hated his good clothes because they didn't feel good.
How could good clothes be good clothes when they didn't feel good? His pants were itchy, and he had to button his shirt all the way up at the top and down at the sleeves, and he had to put on shoes that didn't feel good, but he had to wear them. And he always had to take a bath, and then they'd all go in the living room, and there'd be all this food on the table, food that they never got to eat, like potato chips and crackers and nuts and dip, but they didn't get to eat it. Because they weren't allowed to eat it until Aunt Edith took a bite, and she never did. It was always the same. She talked. She wouldn't eat. She would talk. She would talk and talk and talk about this sister and that brother and this aunt and that uncle who just had a little baby boy, cutest thing you ever seen, who's going to Florida for the winter, hope of the vacation. The weather was nice down there because it wasn't nice last time. Someone had to go out in the hospital. They just got a new job. Hope it worked out. And she just talked and talked and talked and talked. Jack thought she's never going to stop. This always happens. And that was why Jack didn't like it when she came. And to top it all off, she didn't like animals. One day their dog Scoop had gotten out of the basement and ran into the living room when Aunt Edith was visiting and then run right over to Aunt Edith because it always liked the newcomers. Jumped right on Aunt Edith's lap and Aunt Edith said, "Oh, it's a dog. What is a dog? Oh, it's got hair." Jack thought, "Well, of course it's got hair. Dogs always have hair." She didn't like animals. And now, Tricky was out. Jack woke up that morning. He looked at the cage by his bed and he saw the hamster was gone. He said, "Oh no, Tricky got out last night." Will said, "It's your fault." Jack said, "No, it's your fault because you were teasing me." Will said, "It's your hamster. It's your fault." Jack said, "No, it's yours." "Yeah, it's yours." "Hey, Mom, stop it, Will. Stop it." Their mother said, "Both of you, stop it. What's going on?" She came in the room. Jack said, "Mom, Tricky's out." "What?" "Tricky got out last night because the top wasn't on tight." Will said, "Jack didn't put it on tight." She said, "Oh, what are we going to do? Aunt Edith is coming tomorrow and she doesn't like animals. We've got to get him." "Jack, don't tell your father. You've got to get him back." Jack said, "Mom, I know what to do. Last time, remember we took the peanuts. We put the peanuts on the floor by my bed and he came out from underneath the bed. That's what we'll do." He went down into the kitchen. He got a jar of peanuts. He took a handful and he put them on the floor by his bed. And he sat on the bed until it was time to go to school. But Tricky didn't come. He got home that afternoon. He ran in the house. His mother was already cleaning for Aunt Edith. She was vacuuming. "Did you find him?" "No." Jack went into his room and he heard his mother yell over the vacuum cleaner, "Oh, over here, quick, 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 come get him, come get him. Okay." Jack ran into the living room. His mother was behind the drapes. "He's back here, Jack." Jack ran over, but it was too late. He heard his mother say, "Ouch!" And when he pulled back the curtains, his mother was holding her finger. He said, "Did you get him?" She said, "He got away." "How come?" "'Cause he bit me." Jack said, "I know. That's why I call him Tricky." She said, "Jack, he got away. I don't know where he is. You've got to get him back." He said, "Don't worry, Mom. He'll come to the peanuts." And he took another handful of nuts and he put them on the floor by his bed. That evening after dinner, they almost got him again. Jack was in the kitchen when he heard his brother yell, "Quick, Jack, quick, quick, come here, come here, come here." He ran into the room and found Will underneath the bed, his legs sticking out. He heard him yelling, "He's back here in the corner. I'm going to get him now. Okay, here he is." And... "Oh, gross." Jack said, "Did you get him? Did you get him?" But Will backed out of the bed. He got away. Jack said, "Did he bite you?" "No." "Well, how come he got away?" "'Cause he pooped on my hands," Jack said.
"I know. That's why I call him Tricky."
Will said, "You gotta get him. He's your dumb hamster." "He's not dumb, and he'll come to the nuts," said Jack. And he put another handful of nuts by the bed. And he went to bed, looking at those nuts, hoping that Tricky would come home soon. That night, Jack was asleep when something woke him up. His father yelling like this. What the? Jack! Jack got out of bed and walked into his parents' room. And there on the bed was his father, standing up in his pajamas with the light on. And Jack said, "What are you doing up there?" His father said, "Jack, your hamster was in my bed." Jack said, "Well, did you get him?" "No, I didn't get him." Jack said, "I know. That's why I call him Tricky." "Oops." His father said, "Jack, you'd better get that hamster because Aunt Edith is coming tomorrow and she doesn't like animals." Jack said, "I know. Don't worry, Dad. He'll come to the nuts. He's always come to the nuts before when he got out. He got out once and he'll come to the nuts." Jack went back to the bed. He woke up the next morning and the nuts were still there. Jack went to school, thought about Tricky all day long. He got home, he walked in the door with Will, and their mother met them at the door and said, "Go take a bath." "A bath? It's Friday." "Go take a bath for Aunt Edith." "Take a bath for Aunt..." "Just go take a bath." Jack said, "This always happens." He went up and took a bath, put his clothes back on, but his mother came in and said, "No, put on your good clothes." "I don't like my good clothes. The pants are itchy and the shoes don't feel good and I don't like..." She said, "Put your clothes on." And Jack said, "This always happens." Jack put his clothes on, came downstairs, and there on the coffee table in the living room was all that food. Will said, "Look at that food." Jack said, "Yeah." Their mother said, "Don't touch it." Jack said, "This always happens." They had to sit on the couch. Jack said, "I hate this." Will said, "Not as much as I do." "Mom," Jack's sticking his tongue out. And Jack said, "Mom, Will's looking at me funny." And their mother said, "Will, both of you, please stop it." The doorbell rang. She said, "Go answer the door." They went and answered the door. And there she was. She looked like she always looked. She was a million years old. She had baggy clothes on and baggy stockings and those big shoes, and her hair was silvery and blue, and she had those big eyeglasses. And she said, "Oh, look at you. You've grown so much. I hardly recognize you. Which one are you? Oh, you're such a young man now. You know, you have your father's eyes. Has anyone ever told you that?" And Jack thought, "She always says that." And then they went in the living room, and all of them sat down. Jack and Will, and Jack's mom and dad and Aunt Edith sat on the couch, and there was all the food. And Jack thought, "Maybe she'll take a bite and I can have a potato chip," but she didn't. She talked. She talked and she talked. She talked about this brother and that sister and this aunt, this uncle who just had a cute little baby, you wouldn't believe it, who's gone to Florida for a winter, hoping the weather held out, so really fine, who just got a new job, who had to go to the hospital. She just talked and talked and talked and talked and talked. Jack said, "I don't know what she's saying. She's talking so fast. She always does that." Jack was staring at Aunt Edith, wishing she would take a bite of something, when her hand went out to a bowl. And he thought, "Oh, she's going to take a bite right now." And she took a whole handful of nuts, and she brought them back, but she didn't eat them. She put them on her knee, holding the peanuts in her hand, and she still talked and talked and talked and talked and talked and talked and talked. And Jack thought, "She's never gonna eat, and I'm gonna die." Jack was staring at her hand, wondering why she didn't eat something. He was staring at her hand, and he didn't notice Tricky climbing out from inside the couch with his nose up in the air and his whiskers wagging back and forth. He didn't notice because he was staring at Aunt Edith's hands that held all the peanuts. He didn't notice, but his mother did. His mother saw Tricky, and she didn't want to say anything because Aunt Edith hated animals. So instead she said, "Oh, I think it's time for dinner." But Aunt Edith said, "Oh, just a minute, let me finish this story. Another story I want to tell you about. Oh, you know, it's just so good to see you. I want to catch up with everything." And she kept talking.
Jack's father saw Tricky too. He said, Aunt Edith, if I showed you the living room, the dining room it is, I just painted it. Would you like to see it? She said, you just wait a minute. I'd love to see it, but first I want to tell you what happened. Will saw Tricky. He said, I got to go upstairs right now, because he knew Aunt Edith hated animals. But she said, you sit right there, Will. I want to tell you something. You're going to be very interested in what I have to say. Jack's mom saw him. Jack's dad saw him. Will saw him. Jack didn't see Tricky until he got right up to where Aunt Edith was. With his nose waggling up in the air, Tricky stood up on his hind legs. Right there by Aunt Edith's hands, he reached out to climb on top of Aunt Edith's hands. And Jack saw him just as Aunt Edith felt something climb into her hand. And at the same time, Jack screamed, Tricky! And Aunt Edith screamed, ah! And Jack jumped for Tricky and landed in Aunt Edith's lap. And the peanuts went up in the air and Tricky jumped off the couch and hid underneath it. And there was Jack looking up at Aunt Edith. And Aunt Edith looking down at Jack and she said, what was that? Jack said, it's my hamster, Tricky, and he got away, and we've been trying to get him, and he bit my mom, and he pooped on my brother's hands, and he got in my dad's bed, and we weren't supposed to have him because you don't like animals, and you never smile. She looked at Jack. She looked at everybody frozen in their spot, and she said, who said I don't like animals? Jack said, I don't remember. You think I don't like animals? Well, you didn't like it when Scoop jumped up on and got hair all over you, and I knew you wouldn't like this either, and he's under the couch now. We gotta get him back. He was looking at Aunt Edith, and he saw her eyes sparkle, and she said, we'll see about that. And she reached out, and she took another handful of nuts, and she pulled up her baggy dress, and she got down on her knees. Jack's father said, Edith, you don't have to do that. She said, shh, shh, shh. I'm 82 years old. I'll do what I want. And she got on her hands and knees, and she lifted the flap at the bottom of the couch. She held the nuts out, and she said, Tricky, this is Aunt Edith. You come out right now. And he did. He climbed out right from underneath the couch, and Aunt Edith looked at him for a moment. And then she reached down and she picked him up. She held him there as he ate the peanuts. And she said, oh, he tickles, doesn't he? He tickles. Jack said, do you like him? Well, yes, I like him. Sure, I like him. Jack said, you like animals. Her eyes sparkled through her glasses. And he said, Aunt Edith, you're smiling. She said, of course I am. Your hamster made me smile. And he said, I know. That's why I call him Tricky.
Aunt Edith meets Tricky from the great storyteller Bill Harley. We're going to wrap up today with a story from Glenda Bonin. It's a pourquoi story. Pourquoi means why in French. And in a pourquoi story, you learn in a storytelling way how something came to be the way it is. And if you've ever wondered how Beetle got her colors, here's one explanation. Again, Glenda Bonin with how Beetle got her colors here on the Appleseed.
How Beetle Got Her Colors, a folktale from Brazil. There are many interesting and colorful beetles all around the world, but in Brazil, there is a beetle so beautiful to behold that it sometimes appears to be a polished gem. They say, however, that this was not always so. There was a time when Beetle was plain. Beetle was ordinary. Beetle was the color of the earth. Indeed, she looked like a small stone when she walked on the ground. It was easy for other creatures to accidentally step on her. Beetle had learned to be careful and to walk on the side of the path so she could be out of everyone's way. Most creatures didn't pay attention to Beetle, so she was able to go about the world without much trouble. But, well, one gray rat seemed to enjoy going out of his way to torment Beetle. Rat looked for Beetle every day, and when he found her, he teased her. "Beetle," he would say. "Beetle, you are plain. You are ordinary. You are not nearly as handsome as I am. Look at me. I have soft gray fur, a long tail, and two lovely ears. What do you have that's special?" "Nothing. You are so plain. No one even sees you." While this hurt Beetle's feelings, she tried to pay no attention to the awful things Rat said to her. Her mother had told her to ignore anyone who teased her, and eventually they would get bored and go away, so Beetle ignored Rat. I am sorry to say this, but that did not stop Rat from looking for Beetle every day and say mean things to her. One day, as he ran up to Beetle, dust spread out from his feet when he screeched to a halt. This caused Beetle to cough, but Rat didn't say he was sorry. Instead, he said to Beetle, "Beetle, you are so slow. You hardly move at all. Look at how fast I can run. I can run circles around you. You are plain and you are slow." Now, all this had been overheard by a parrot sitting in a tree overhead. Parrot knew how Rat had been teasing Beetle for days. Parrot called down to the rat and Beetle, "Rat, Beetle, I suggest you have a contest. To the winner I will award a handmade coat of any color. The winner will get a coat, and the loser will agree not to bother the winner again." Rat was delighted. A contest! He loved contests! Rat asked Parrot what kind of contest he had in mind. He said, "Look, I win every contest I ever enter, so you might as well forget about a contest and just give me the prize." Beetle just looked up at Parrot and wondered what he was up to. Parrot said, "Do you see that mango tree over there? Whoever can get to the mango tree first will be the winner." Rat was disappointed. "Is that all? Come on, why not hold a race that at least will be a challenge to win? Beetle doesn't have a chance." "We will see," said Parrot. Rat replied, "Okay, as long as I'm gonna win, you might as well get started on my coat. I'm already about as handsome as I can be, but I think I'd look even better with a red line starting at the top of my head, running down my back and out my tail. Everyone will know it's me if they see the red stripe. When are we going to have this race of yours? I want to win my new coat right away." Parrot asked the two contestants to line up under the tree where he was sitting, and he started the countdown. 1, 2, 3, and off sped Rat. He took off so fast that a cloud of dust could be seen behind him. He turned around and looked, but he didn't see a sign of Beetle. "Oh, boy, this is fun. I'm going to have a great coat. I think I'll ask for 2 blue dots, too. Yeah, a blue dot on each of my shoulders. That'll look great with my red stripe." As soon as Rat got to the mango tree, he was stunned to see Beetle waiting for him. "Huh? How did you get here? Did you cheat?" "No," said Beetle. "Well then, how'd you get here so fast?" Beetle lifted up her hard shell to reveal 2 beautiful, delicate wings, and she said, "Well, I flew."
"You flew? I didn't know you could fly."
"Well, you never asked me," said Beetle. And with that, Rat crawled away to find a rotten old log to hide in. As Rat left, Parrot called after him. "Rat, I hope you've learned something today.
Even the plainest creatures have something very special about them. Next time you might want to get to know others before you even think about teasing. Then Parrot asked Beetle what sort of a coat she would like to have. Well, Beetle had not had time to even think about a coat. But as she looked up at Parrot and saw his beautiful colors, she wondered what it would be like to look so wonderful. As she was looking at Parrot, Beetle noticed the green leaves in the trees all around. And as she was considering all these different colors of green, a bit of sunlight came through the leaves, making the trees sparkle. She asked Parrot, "May I have a coat of green, a mix of all the wonderful greens of the trees? And may I have a little bit of sunlight, too?" From that day to this, the beetles in Brazil have shells of different colors of green with a little bit of sunlight mixed in. Their shells are so lovely and shiny, they resemble precious gemstones. And that is how they say the beetles in Brazil got to be so very beautiful.
Glenda Bonin with a story about how Beetle got her beautiful colors. What a pleasure it's been for me to spend this hour with you, bringing you not only that story, but that wonderful story, Aunt Edith Meets Tricky by Bill Harley. You heard from Willie Claflin and his storytelling companion, Maynard Moose, with Iron John and the Little Drummer Boy. And, of course, a conversation with Don Shaline about a Sean Colvin tune. Great songs can unlock the story memories that we might want to share with those that we love. What a pleasure to have you with us this hour. It was written by Kendra Hanna. Our audio engineer is Carly Robison. Our producer is Jeff Simpson. I'm Sam Payne. You can find us online at byuradio.org/appleseed for an archive filled with episodes, filled with stories. Each of those stories is one that may already be a favorite or could be a favorite as you listen to it. And I can't wait to be with you again on the Appleseed.
Thanks for joining us for an hour of stories, music, and conversation made for you and your family and brought to you by The Appleseed. The show is a production of BYU Radio. We'll see you next time.